This week in KMA Land, Governor Reynolds gives condition to the state speech. Shenandoah Mayor reacts to property tax reform proposal. Clarinda's superintendent weighs in on state school funding. Iowa House Committee advances eminent domain bill. U.S. Labor Secretary visits Iowa Western Community College. And Shenandoah school officials tackle K-8 building issues. I'm Mike Peterson. The 2026 Iowa General Assembly is underway at the State House, and Governor Kim Reynolds has a full agenda in her final year at the state's helm. Before a joint session of the Iowa Legislature and other state officials, Reynolds delivered her 2026 condition of the state Tuesday evening at the Iowa Capitol building. Reynolds also used her speech to unveil months' worth of conversations on how best to address property tax reform in the state, a proposal her office said would cut property taxes by $3 billion over 6 years. Primarily, Reynolds proposed legislation limiting overall revenue growth for local governments.
Spending is what drives taxes, always has, always will, and the most reliable way to protect taxpayers is to limit the growth of government itself. I'm introducing a property tax bill that will cap overall revenue growth for local governments. That way, they can't grow faster than the families who pay the bills.
Reynolds' plan will also change Iowa's assessment system so home values are assessed every 3 years rather than every two. Reynolds adds, proposed freezing property taxes for certain senior citizens in Iowa.
My proposal freezes property tax bills for Iowans age 65 and up whose homes are valued at $350,000 or less, so they can stay in their homes and their communities, because no one should be taxed out of their own front door.
The governor also broached the topic of cancer in Iowa, particularly emphasizing the importance of early screening. Iowa has the second highest rate of new cancers in the U.S. and is one of only two states with a rising cancer rate. In terms of investments, Reynolds pointed to the $209 million awarded to the state for the first year of the Federal Rural Health Transformation Program, with $50 million going towards cancer prevention, screening, and treatment.
It means a working parent who can get a mammogram and a follow-up MRI before a lump becomes a diagnosis. It means Iowans can do a colon cancer test at home and get a colonoscopy before symptoms appear. It means telehealth visits and new skin cancer screening tools so care doesn't get delayed because life is busy. It means routine prostate exams, catching cancer while it's still treatable. And it means radon testing and mitigation so families aren't unknowingly exposed to the second leading cause of lung cancer in their own homes.
Reynolds also discussed education to the state, in addition to proposing a bill to ensure public charter school students have access to concurrent enrollment and extracurricular activities. Reynolds also highlighted an announcement earlier this month that Iowa would receive more control over how federal education dollars are spent. U.S. Secretary of Education Linda McMahon announced at Broadway Elementary School in Denison that her department approved Iowa's Unified Allocation Plan waiver request, giving state officials the authority to roll federal funds for various education programs with a single $9.5 million block grant.
Broadway Elementary is the perfect example of why that matters. Innovation was happening in every classroom we visited. Dual language immersion, STEM, and the science of reading, and it's driving student achievement. Literacy proficiency jumped from 65% to 72% in just 1 year.
And notably absent from the governor's speech were proposals or comments on eminent domain as it pertains to carbon sequestration projects in the state, something several lawmakers identified as a priority for the 2026 session. More on that in just a moment. Well, at least one KMA land official is sounding off on Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds' property tax reform proposal. In her condition to the state speech Tuesday evening, Reynolds unveiled her proposal for a 2% cap on property tax revenue growth for city and county budgets. Shenandoah Mayor Roger McQueen is among local government officials attempting to digest the governor's proposal. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Wednesday morning, McQueen says the proposed cap on municipalities' tax revenues won't work.
Here we go. In my opinion, you know, they're hand tying small government. I think this is what the whole purpose of it is. The, you know, they would like to have all the money and then just give it back to the cities what they feel, you know, that they should have for their services. And this is not going to work.
And McQueen says the proposal would be disastrous for communities smaller than Shenandoah, making it difficult for them to provide services.
Thank goodness we've got some grants through different organizations for our police and fire departments. But, you know, that will be the first thing probably you'll see cut is police officers, fire departments will have to reduce. You know, that's the things that bother me is when you have to start reducing services. You know, if a city has to lay off one of their two city employees in a small town, that, you know, how's that going to affect snow removal? How's that going to affect water problems and so forth?
The mayor adds KMA Land legislative representatives he's talked to have been very receptive of concerns expressed regarding property tax reform's impact on rural communities. Governor Reynolds also proposed a 2% increase in supplemental state aid for Iowa's K-12 schools. In an interview on KMA's Morning Line program Thursday morning, Clarinda School Superintendent Jeff Privia was asked how the level would impact funding for not only his district, but others.
Yeah, if they stick with 2%, that leaves 199 school districts on budget guarantee in the state. It'll cost the state $42.3 million, I think it was, to be at 2%. If they would get to 3%, it actually, I believe, costs them a little less. But, you know, they've got to do their thing there at the state level. And I know the representatives in our area have really been pushing for 3%. And we'll see what gets done in legislation. But 3% would be a lot better for us. Give us just a few more dollars. And but if we stick with 2, you know, we'll make adjustments and do what we need to do.
Preliminary action on eminent domain legislation took place during the first week of the legislative session. By a 19-2 vote, the Iowa House Judiciary Committee advanced House Study Bill 507, which would prohibit exercising the power of eminent domain for construction, operation, or acquiring the right-of-way for a pipeline with the primary purpose of transporting carbon dioxide. The bill is one of several expected to be proposed on carbon sequestration projects in eminent domain during the 2026 legislative session, which again started Monday. State Representative Stephen Holt sponsored HSB 507. During the committee meeting Wednesday, the Denison Republican said the bill protects Iowans' fundamental rights to private property.
The use of eminent domain should be incredibly rare and must meet the constitutional requirement of public use. The CO2 pipeline project, which according to its supporters will be a great benefit to agriculture and to our economy, and that's great. I hope they're right, but that does not make it a public use project. We need to call it what it is. It is an economic development project. Economic development is of profound importance, but it does not trump constitutional rights.
Proponents of the project argue it would open low-carbon markets for ethanol produced in Iowa and be an economic opportunity for the state due to federal tax credits offered under the One Big Beautiful Bill last year. But Holt says economic development shouldn't outweigh property rights.
Supporting agriculture and renewable fuels such as ethanol are important for our ag economy. But we can foster economic growth without trampling on the constitutionally protected rights of our fellow citizens. Those who want the pipeline can sign voluntary easements. Those who do not have the constitutionally protected right to refuse. And the government has no right in this case to intervene.
On Wednesday's hearing followed the U.S. Supreme Court's denial of a request to review a lower court's ruling on county ordinances pertaining to carbon sequestration pipelines in Iowa. It was show-and-tell time for Iowa Western Community College officials hosting a federal official this week. U.S. Labor Secretary Lori Chavez de Remer visited the Iowa Western campus Wednesday morning to sample the school's workforce development activities. Iowa Western President Dr. Daniel Kenny says an email notified the school of Chavez de Remer's desire to visit the campus because of its strong partnership with the Council Bluffs School District's apprenticeship and pre-apprenticeship program.
Honestly, we got an email saying that she was going to be in the area for some other things, wanted to visit an educational entity, had heard great things of what Iowa Western's already doing in our apprenticeships, working with high schools, really driving students in those career trade areas that are needed for manufacturing. So she wanted to do a stop by and see what we're doing, see the great work.
Kinney and Council Bluffs School Superintendent Dr. Vicki Morello took Chavez de Reamer on a guided tour of the Iowa Western campus, including a visit to a welding class inside Kinney Hall. Tyler Walter is a junior at Council Bluffs Abe Lincoln High School. Walter displayed some of the work he's doing in class. He hopes that it gives the secretary an idea of how students are being trained.
She gets to see what the welding lab has to offer and how many kids are going to be welding here and what they can do and potentially help find new kids that want to go find this and see if they want this as a career.
Chavez de Reamer also visited HVAC and plumbing labs while at Iowa Western. Structural issues in the Shenandoah School District's K-8 building have school officials' attention. Classes inside the building resumed Monday after problems discovered in one of the elementary classrooms prompted last Friday's noontime early dismissal. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Tuesday morning, Shenandoah School Superintendent Dr. Kerry Nelson says officials with IMEG, the district's building consultants, recommended holding classes as usual while troubleshooting the building issues.
You know, they did make some recommendations of what we can do with some different types of sealants and the work on some of the expansion joints, and we're putting together an RFP to have companies bid on doing that work, and we'll complete that work as, you know, once we have the information, we can look at the bids that are available, and that's where it currently stands.
Nelson says the repairs are expected to take place no later than this summer. Discussion on finances and facilities took place at a Shenandoah School Board work session following the regular meeting Monday evening. And Nelson says repairs were outlined in an ongoing facility study at the K-8 and high school buildings.
Earlier this school year, we made the decision to focus on heat pump replacements this summer. We have bids that will be going out here in the next few weeks, and we'll be starting that work for that work to be complete over the summer. So the discussion was, you know, depending on where that comes in, how much money remains to do other projects.
Nelson says the district is expected to cover future repairs with existing funds without the need for a bond issue referendum. The arrival of 2026 means new names and faces on the Shenandoah City Council. Tuesday's first regular meeting of 2026 marked the first session for two new council members elected in November, Councilman-at-Large Matthew Regan and First Ward Councilman Jeffrey Capps. It was also the first meeting for Roger McQueen's second term as mayor. McQueen, who is reelected in the November 4th city school elections, officially welcomed Capps and Regan to the council.
We have a lot of opportunities in the next 4 years to get a lot of things done, and I hope we can continue to move forward as we have.
Regan tells KMA News he's excited to join the council. He adds it's been a smooth transition thus far.
It was nice, pretty easy going. Got on the library board, so that was fun to go to that first meeting, and now I'm on to the city council meeting, so it was nice.
Both Regan and Capps received special training on legal matters, finances, and other subjects prior to joining the council. Capps was asked what he's learned so far.
Well, I've learned that it really takes a lot to fund the city, and there's a lot of information out there, and I'm ready to share information with people, and so far it's been a good thing.
In other business, the council approved a request for proposals from Shenandoah property owners seeking redevelopment or deconstruction of underutilized buildings to stimulate growth or reinvestment in the community. The RFPs are part of the city's application for the Iowa Economic Development Authority's Community Catalyst Grant Program. Clarinda City Council dealt with a doggone dilemma at its first 2026 meeting Wednesday night. Council members unanimously denied Nancy Ulmer's request for funding assistance to help cover veterinary costs for her daughter's dog. The dog was injured while she was walking it on the trails near Clarinda's dog park in November of last year. Ulmer says she let the dog off a leash along the trail before it was injured by a circular piece of rebar lying on the trail. After multiple vet visits to determine the issue with the animal, Ulmer says the costs of surgeries and continued treatment exceeded $14,000.
I am wanting some help paying these vet bills. Number one is because the rebar was right there in the path. I know my dog was not on a leash. Nobody was around. It's out in the country. Who would think that you'd have to keep a dog on a leash at a dog park? I'd say if you're going to make that a law, then you need to be posting out there that, you know, you must keep your dog on a leash, because I see dogs running loose all the time out there.
Ulmer argued the city should be somewhat liable due to the incident occurring on city-managed property and the rebar sitting on the path.
And that's where she hit herself. And it was at the right exact thing for a dog's belly, or even a kid could have tripped, could have poked out an eye or something. So I'm asking for some help paying these vet bills. It's not like a couple hundred dollars that we incurred. It's $14,823, and there's going to be more.
While acknowledging the unfortunate circumstances, Clarinda Mayor Craig Hill says the city submitted the claim to its insurance provider and its lawyers to help determine liability. However, Hill says their insurance company declined the claim.
Due to the fact that the city has a leash law and your dog was unleashed and uncontrolled, the city had no previous notice of this issue, which this particular rebar, and the city did not put the traps down, therefore did not cause this issue. The rebar was placed around the trees when it was under CYC to protect the trees from the beavers and so forth.
City Attorney Ron Bidding notes that it's uncommon for the council to go against its insurance provider's recommendation without further action, such as becoming a legal matter. At the end of the discussion, Ulmer said she intends to seek legal counsel on the matter. A federal judge this week barred the Creston School District from taking any further action against a high school English teacher for her Facebook comment related to the shooting death of Charlie Kirk. Ethan Hewitt has more.
In an order Tuesday, U.S. District Judge for the Southern District of Iowa, Rebecca Goodgame Ebinger, granted in part Melissa Crook's motion for a temporary restraining order against the district and the Creston School Board, preventing any further adverse employment action based on the notice of recommendation to terminate that had been prepared by Creston School Superintendent Darren Stender. Well, in September, according to court documents, Crooks was informed she was potentially facing termination for a social media comment regarding Kirk. Crook then sued the school district in federal court, alleging that her First Amendment rights were being violated after she was placed on administrative leave. Per Ebinger's decision Tuesday, the court found the enforcement of First Amendment rights outweighs any potential employment harm to the defendants, adding that the public has a compelling interest in protection of First Amendment and other constitutional rights. The decision reads that Crooks has provided sufficient evidence to suggest she was speaking as a citizen on a matter of public concern when she made her Facebook post stating she made her comments on her personal time at home from her personal Facebook account and did not speak as an employee of the school district.
That's Ethan Hewitt reporting. Debate over preliminary salary increases for elected officials in the upcoming fiscal year took place at this week's Mills County Board of Supervisors meeting. By a 2-1 vote at its regular meeting Tuesday, the supervisors approved a resolution setting the initial salary increases for fiscal year 2027 beginning July 1st of 3% for the county attorney, auditor, recorder, and treasurer, 1.5% for the county sheriff, and 0% for the supervisors. Supervisor Jack Sayers cast the lone dissenting vote. Sayers says he has concerns over providing a 3% increase to county attorney Deshaun Birdsell, which would bring her salary up to around $120,000 in fiscal 27.
This isn't me going after her for personal reasons. It isn't me not liking her. It isn't a vendetta. I didn't vote against the county engineer's raise because of it. I didn't vote against the assessor's raise because of it. I voted against those two, and I'm going to vote against this as well because this is not good fiscal policy. This is not the way it's intended, and this is why we're seeing the state going to hammer down.
Supervisor Chair Richard Crouch and Supervisor Lonnie Mayberry voted in favor of the proposed increases. Crouch says the salary increases can still be adjusted once they know more about each department's budget proposal.
The process that we go through from now until we get to the budget. When we get to the budget, then we can say, okay, can we afford to do a 3% or maybe it can only be a 2%? We can go down, but we cannot go up. The process that has to be set, but when we get to the budget figures, we don't know what's going to come into the budget yet.
Well, indicating he was in favor of the majority of the other proposed increases, Sayers says those proposals followed compensation board guidelines. Guidelines that Sayers notes had suggested a decrease in salary for the county attorney. Sayers also pointed to staff size as another factor suggesting a decrease. In related business, at Tuesday's supervisors' meeting, the board also approved setting a 3% pay increase for all non-union, non-elected county employees in fiscal year 27. That wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com. You can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.